Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Tweet at us or just follow us or both. Twitter is DMD Radio Empire. You're listening to the Todd and Tyler Radio Empire.
TJ Miller with us in the studio. If you want to see him in the Funny Bone this weekend, you got to scalp your tickets or something. It's sold out, right?
No, yeah. Scalping. I'm not
Colleen's
up
bitching.
For that.
No. No scalping. It's sold out, but TJ's back every year.
And
so.
I cannot tell you the number of people, even last night, come up to me and say, I heard you on Todd and Tyler. And I say, oh, those guys are the best. And your fans are they're the greatest. Because they said,
cool
no,
people.
They're great, they're so smart, but they're so out there. And they just, oh, I listen every single morning. And this guy was a bartender. He said, I can't get through my day without listening. It's great.
Is the lady still around that wrote you the note that said she was your biggest farm? You remember sharing that with us?
Yeah.
Yes. I'm your biggest farm. I was like, you got all the pigs and chickens, baby.
Yeah. I don't know if the listeners know this. We found this out a while back, obviously, that you and Kate were college sweethearts. And I want to ask Kate, because would you?
George Washington University.
George Washington, okay. D.C., right.
Yeah.
Would you have fell for the famous TJ? Because you're such a real person, and I've talked to you off the air, and you seem like nothing impresses you. You're not impressed by fame. And we had a conversation about some other actors off the air that's off the record. You're not impressed by fame. So I don't see you being impressed by somebody being famous. TJ would be now if you met him. But you were college sweethearts. He was not famous.
No, he very much was not famous.
was he even the funniest guy? Was he the funniest guy in theater at George Washington?
Well, yeah. I mean,
he was.
Famous TJ is, I guess the short answer to your question is yes, I absolutely would fall for famous TJ.
Okay.
Not because he's famous, but because
he is the same
thing
guy
that made me fall in love with him back in college.
Mm-hmm.
Is now, you know, just on a larger sort of world stage.
Right.
And back in the very beginning, I mean, the shape of his heart was, I'd like to relieve people from their suffering. You know, you can't avoid it. It's an inevitable part of life. And
mm-hmm.
if I do my job correctly, then I can just lift them up for a couple of seconds and unite people with laughter. And thankfully, that's what he gets to do.
I had no idea he was that altruistic.
He really, from the beginning, was. And I kind of tried to, like, not fall for him, and I failed,
do it all for my farms.
Oh, you tried not to fall for him.
Yeah, I mean, even
because you didn't know where his career was going to go.
It's not about that. It's like, you know, when you said
she was dating a guy in New York City.
You're dating somebody else.
I did have an older boyfriend at the time.
Oh, la-di-da.
But the thing was, you know, our first interaction was him kind of trying to impress me.
How'd you meet on campus?
I'm not impressed. We were both doing a chorus line.
All right.
Tell me you would see me around campus.
Yeah, well, that's true. Like, I would see him around campus. We, you know, it's a small campus and it's in the city. And so we kind of had, like,
cuss on this radio.
Similar. Okay. Thank you for that.
You can tell she's about to cuss? The story involves cussing, you mean?
Yes. Okay. Similar. We would see each other a lot. I mean, I would see him because I would always be going to the dance studio and he would be going, you know, like crossing paths.
Right.
For a certain class at a certain time. And I remember seeing him and, you know, he sort of stood out in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I'd see him every day. And I remember thinking, God, that guy is probably a real a-hole. You know? And I don't know why.
I had never talked to her. I had never interacted with her, not even once.
That was just my impression. Really getting it. So then we were in rehearsal for a chorus line and he came, you know, kind of like, walking up to me, and I was like, oh, this guy, this freaking guy.
Yeah. And then what was your – so you liked her, obviously, right away.
Well,
right?
I saw her the first meeting for a chorus line, and was interesting, and she wasn't really an actor then,
mm-hmm.
and I was definitely not a dancer or a singer. So we both sort of did this because it was the only thing that you could do in the performance space at that time.
Right.
So we were in – this Black Box Theater and having this meeting, and I looked over at her and I go, oh my gosh, whoa. Mm-hmm. And so what I decided to do was I had a strawberry bagel and I kind of pushed it over.
Of course you did.
Yeah. And so it was a bagel with strawberry cream cheese.
Okay.
And so I kind of pointed to her and silently said, you want some of this? And she was like, yeah. And so I pushed it over to her and she had a little bit, and then she pushed it over to me. And I had some of it, and then I pushed it back over to her, and we went back and forth slowly, trying to give the other person the last bite. So we went back and forth.
So you wasn't so much of an a-hole then. You just thought he looked like an a-hole.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, I didn't have any proof that he was an a-hole. He just gave off that vibe. I don't know why. And he's not.
I have that a-hole vibe, I guess.
No.
And I'm anything but an a-hole, and this is officially the most times I've ever heard anyone say a-hole in a room altogether. And so then I thought, oh, I'm doing great because we did this really cute bagel flirting.
Right, yeah, that's perfect.
And the sharing, you know, and sort of showed each other, oh, well, you know, we like to share and we care about the other person.
Were you seeing anybody at the time?
What's that?
Were you seeing anybody at the time?
No.
Okay.
I think I was, you know, it was college.
Yeah.
I was seeing a couple people.
Exactly.
And they were seeing other people.
Right.
And so I thought, oh, yeah, I'm really in. And I did well with the silent flirting.
I think,
good nonverbal bonding there.
It was great. It was a good moment.
Yeah.
And then as we leave, what I go up to her as it's over, and I'm like, all right, I'm going to talk to her and try and get to know her. Mm-hmm. And what did I say?
He was like, hey, so are you a freshman? And I was like, no, I'm a junior.
And then she turned and walked away.
And what were you?
I was a junior also.
Oh, really?
We're exactly the same age. I'm 11 days older than her.
Got it.
Yeah.
And you said I'm a junior and just walked away?
Yeah, because
in college, you can't be labeled a freshman.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
No, that's
exactly.
It. Totally.
And so then I go, I just went back to zero.
It's the worst thing to be called in college as a freshman.
Oh, of course.
Unless you're a freshman. Right.
I mean, yeah, because freshmen have this like dumb, like, well, you know, like, I don't know what's going on. Like, yeah.
And so that's what
she
thought
about
I was saying.
Freshman vibe, a-hole.
Yeah. A-hole. I gave off an a-hole vibe. She gave off a freshman vibe.
So she walked away. Then when was the next meeting?
Well, I think it was probably for a party after the show. Right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think so. I don't know. I mean, I think slowly but surely we were at rehearsal. We would see each other all the time. And, you know, he really wore me down, but it didn't take much because he's very much not an a-hole. He's such an altruistic person.
No, yeah, it's funny. When we first met TJ, it's been a while, but he was basically a Stainer. He was Stainer.
And so yeah.
I knew him from one movie, and I knew he was a stand-up, and he was really, really cool to us.
Yeah.
And I loved him. You know,
I think
she's out of my league.
Him,
he stole that movie. I said, that was very cool. And then he's blown up since then, and he still likes the show, and we like him. And that's what makes us, he's a real dude.
This is my favorite.
He's
you
a real
guys
dude.
And Johnny Depp are the best people in radio for too many reasons to even list.
I'm pretty sure we fell in love with TJ quicker than you did.
There was a separate point after college. You were not together, right?
Well, yeah. So I guess we've known each other now for like 17 or 18 years.
Yeah.
And during the course of that time, you know, we were together for big chunks of it and apart for big chunks of it, mostly because we were living in different cities.
Yeah.
And when we were living in different cities, we kind of had an open relationship.
So there wasn't any conscious decision to break up. You were always friends.
Of course. And I think that when the times that we did sort of break up, it was like, you know, I'm living in New York City and you're living in Chicago or Los Angeles, and this is a long distance.
Right.
And it's painful. And I think we both kind of realized that, and we always saw our relationship as something too precious to grind into the ground. And so the cool part was we kind of let each other grow up.
That's
and
tough
have
to
our
do,
own
man.
Life.
That's
and
tough to do. Most people can't do that.
When she broke up with me the first time because she was saying, hey, I'm in New York, I was crying in a bathtub at Seneca Casino in Niagara Falls,
really?
On the Buffalo, New York side of it. And I was just
grabbing
crying.
Your arm.
You know, all of us have cried in the shower as the water comes down in a dramatic way. When you cry in a completely dry bathtub, you're in a bad place in your life. So it was pretty tough. But she's right. You know, we didn't want to ruin what we had, and we both kind of hoped that we would eventually end up with each other. And third time was the charm, and then we got into it. But we've known each other for 16 years, 17 years.
Yeah, about that. And you know what's so cool is that even from the beginning, I would ask TJ, well, what do you want to do after college?
17 years.
Yeah, that's a question right there, because you wanted to be you obviously wanted to be an entertainer, right? He wasn't going to be an accountant.
I'm going to tell you, he said, I want to be a stand-up comedian.
Oh.
And he didn't say, I want to be a movie star. And he didn't say, I want to do TV. And he didn't say all of the stuff that he's done.
Right.
He just said, I want to do stand-up comedy and be a professional comedian. Mm-hmm. And it's so cool to see that he's accomplished so much, but that's what he's doing every weekend.
But it's interesting because Kate kind of didn't know.
It's interesting because George Washington is not a cheap school.
Yeah, but we both got scholarships.
Oh, that's right. You're
so
smart.
She got a Women in Power scholarship, and I got an academic scholarship. Yeah. I don't know how that happened. I mean, I'm serious. When I got it, I was like, what? But she didn't really know what she wanted to do while she was in school. She said, you know, do I want to be a model? Is that what's important to me? Do I want to be a dancer? Do I want to be an actress? What? And all of that kind of coalesced and came together to be what she is now, which is an artist, somebody who kind of incorporates everything into her art. So that was an interesting journey there, where I knew from the beginning what I wanted to do, and she found her way to that over the course of a decade.
Got it.
Well, I did know at one point in school, when I was in college, I really wanted to be a cultural attaché.
What is that?
Exactly.
No, it sounds like I should know what it is, but tell me what that person does.
It's a person
I still don't know what it is.
It's a person that lives abroad in an embassy and curates arts and culture that promote the United States abroad.
So you're kind of an ambassador.
That's a lovely job.
Exactly. You're working in an ambassadorial capacity for arts and culture and curation.
And you clean up after Julian Assange, right?
That's right.
I guess these days that's true.
You clean up after his cat, right, okay.
But it was tough because I had a lot of support for that career path in school, and especially in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And then I really
you're
realized
in D.C.,
that,
right
like, I had like a really important person ran on my parade and said, well, you better marry an ambassador because that's a gifted position, unless you're Shirley Temple. And I was like,
oh, that's right.
What the heck? But the thing is, I could have I could have gone the road of stamping passports and, doing that. But it's such a small niche thing. And so to get to sort of have this meandering life to find a way to do all those things that I wanted to do back in school.
Mm-hmm.
He knew right away, and he had a straight line, and mine was just kind of more of a squiggle. But
it's also a straight line. I'm going to go to comedy clubs across the country for the next 15 years. Yeah. That's a straight line. The movies and TV showed up.
Right.
Yeah.
I was just laughing because we were watching John Oliver and they caught Julian Assange and they said he looks like a baked potato that rolled around in spider webs.
That's a great line.
That's right. I mean, the movies, and now we live in New York.
Yes.
And my friend Nick Vatterott said, and I thought this was really interesting. He said, the acting, you never really loved that. You'd call me and you say, oh, I'm in New York and I just did 5 sets and I ran and I made the other one and I ran uptown and then I had to take a cab to get downtown in time, but then I was able to do it. And then I went and did another set and then I went back to the club right around the corner. And as they were paying their checks, I told a story. It was such a great night. I never would say that about Silicon Valley, for instance.
Yeah,
I never say, oh, I did one scene and then I ran over to the other part of the studio lot and did an Orbitz commercial and then bounced back really quickly and, did another 2 scenes and then I did a scene from the previous episode. That I would never so great.
But didn't you get any satisfaction to knowing that people loved seeing you as that character?
Well, that's why I would do all that stuff. And that's why you do something like
You don't like the actual work, sometimes a pain in the ass
You do something like Transformers. That's really hard work. It's a really bad work condition.
Yeah.
But, people love it so much that you think, okay, well, it's worth it.
And
it is.
It's about his original intention, which is reaching people and bringing them joy. And
true.
I think that, movies and television give him sort of a platform to reach a lot of people in a lot of different ways.
Well, when he explained his leaving...
I think I'll always do that stuff.
He explained to us why he left Silicon Valley, and I agreed with it. I mean, not that he didn't ask us if we agree with it, but he left it. I understand why. But, once again, those episodes he was on...
I didn't ask you, I asked Craig.
People loved it. Okay. Yeah. People loved it.
You got him.
People love you on the big screen, so I'm glad you're still doing movies and TV.
Yeah,
how did the Carpoolers thing come about? Because that's where I was introduced to you through Carpoolers. Yeah. I knew you as Marmaduke.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. I did an audition. I remember driving to the audition, and somehow in the... I remember so clearly I was on Lakeshore Drive in Chicago and I thought, you know what? I'm sick of doing these auditions and trying to get a part. I'm just going to do what I think is funny.
Mm-hmm.
And so I put on underwear and printed out the pictures of bookcases and put them up behind me. And we taped this audition and it was so ridiculous and so funny. And I just didn't care if I got the part or not.
Right.
And sure enough, I got the part. I got the pilot. And then I went out there and while I was doing the pilot, I auditioned for Cloverfield.
Right.
And that I kind of didn't care about. They gave me a monologue, mm-hmm. and it was really, it was all a secret, and you didn't know what the movie was about. They gave me a monologue, and it was this really heartfelt thing about my father, and he used to be in the military, and I always wanted to look up to him. I went, I go, okay, I'll do this, and I did it. And at the end of it, the casting director goes, that was really good, but it was the wrong sides. Those aren't the lines that you were supposed to. So I gave you the wrong sheet. So I should give you the funny one. I'm thinking, oh, that was embarrassing.
Wow. Oh, you're doing a serious thing.
Yeah. And so then they give me the comedy sides, and, you know, I did a little bit better with that. But then I got Cloverfield there. So I suddenly had to go to Los Angeles. There was
right.
no other choice
because right.
I was shooting a movie there, and the pilot went to series. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty, you know, it was pretty crazy, but it was tough because I always had wanted to live in New York. I never wanted to live in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
So all that kind of happened on its own and at the behest of me. And I think I just used behest incorrectly.
The two movies you mentioned earlier with the, you know, with the Drew Barrymore and Christian.
Sounded good.
Stuart, did they call you and we want T.J. Miller, or did you audition with a bunch of other guys that looked like you?
Well, at the behest of myself.
Yeah.
You know, I was the behest of the behest, yeah. and so they didn't want good, they wanted the behest.
They wanted you. And, not a T.J. Miller type, they wanted T.J. Miller.
Yeah, and so
got it. Good
both,
for you.
Both of those, I didn't audition for those.
Okay, you know? All right.
And then we got a script just recently, and both of us read the script, and they said, do you want to submit a tape for this? And I thought, I don't really want to. The part they're talking about, it's not very funny. Kate read the script, and she goes, this is dark and cruel and torture porn.
It's
and
just not your bag.
Torture porn?
It's more of a horror film.
Oh, it's really, a horror movie?
It's
oh.
really well written. Which
so I'm not going to send in a tape for that. Know, so that's where I am now. I'd rather do stand-up than do a bad
movie you don't want to be in.
Yeah.
Right?
And it's not going to be a bad movie. It's going to be a great movie. It's just not your bag. You know, you don't
but is it a torture porn movie that could be 3, 4, 5, 6 numbers, or are they going to kill you right away?
No. It's in that one, everybody dies.
Everybody
actually,
dies,
except
okay,
for
yeah.
one person. But huh. it is going to be a great movie. It's Alexander Payne who did Sideways.
Oh, we love him. He's an Omaha guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And so you know,
I know that guy.
Even yeah. that, I know that guy.
Yeah, we know Alexander.
So even that, I was kind of going, hey, this is going to be a great movie, but she's right. It just wasn't. It's not something that I want to do.
It's a good place to be in.
Yeah, so that's great. And and now I have this incredible opportunity to say, do I want, like the Drew Barrymore movie? I lost so much money doing that film
because you were on the road.
Because it doesn't pay mm-hmm. nearly as much as stand up, and so I have this great opportunity to say, I'll do a film if it's a great film, mm-hmm. or I can contribute something great to it, and if people will love it. But if not, then it's I don't want to take those 2-3 months not doing stand-up.
Never thought of it that way.
Yeah.
Most of us don't have that problem.
I know, right.
That's a nice, good problem to have.
I'm incredibly fortunate for that. You know?
Well, because you're a great stand-up.
I also worked
stand-up.
Harder than everybody else.
There you
I really
go.
Did yeah. than anyone else.
Yeah, yeah. Right and now. When we broke up the first time, it was largely because when I would go see him, he would go, oh, great, we'll have dinner, and then I'm going to do 8 sets. And I'm like, wait, but I'm here this weekend. And he's like, yeah, but I have to work. And really, seriously, when he says he works harder than anyone else, average night in New York when we have like a down day, he's doing at least 4 sets.
4 sets. And that's four different clubs.
My record is 6 shows in 1 night on a weekday. So that's pretty crazy.
That is crazy.
And I did 5 sets.
Are these New York
Wednesday.
Sets now?
Wednesday, yeah.
Yeah.
What about?
Between
30 minutes?
10 to 12 minutes. But then, yeah, at the clubs that I do, they let me do about 30 minutes. So I think I calculated I did about 2.5 hours of comedy in 1 night, but in 5 different places. And
did you remember when you were
two of those shows were at the same club? I like killed, had great shows, had to leave to make the other set. Then I turned back around and went to that club.
Different crowd?
Did a same crowd.
Did you remember
club.
Where you were so you didn't do the same act?
Well, I went back to tell a story about the entire night because I had the most New York evening where
you got to tell him what happened.
Yeah, so I didn't have. I didn't.
Hang on. Let's tease that.
I like that.
All right, there you go.
Ooh,
it's the greatest New York story of all time.
You better come through with that one.
You're listening to the Todd and Tyler Radio Empire.
Hey, it's Todd and Tyler.
And thank you for listening to the podcast.
Please take a second to tell us how much you like the podcast.
And don't forget to comment.
Thanks again. On to the next podcast episode.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.